Mini-episode 509 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 509. It is, you might say, the almighty's gift to Gridiron Talk. FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Kyle Ross. We've been with you all year, third season in a row, week by week, going through the games. We are up this week to Championship Sunday. As I always say, one of my favorite days of the year, not just the sporting calendar, but of the year. I always throw a nice little bash here on Championship Sunday. You, Kyle, are invited, but I know you are a man much in demand. You'll probably be elsewhere. The invite certainly stands for you and for anybody that's able to stalk me enough to be able to find out where I'm at.
Yeah, I was going to say, or anyone listening, please show up at the following address.
If anybody can find out where Casa de Riccio is, I suppose they deserve it. I suppose that should be reward enough. Last week, of course, I was 2-2 in the divisional round games. I am 134-126-4 for the year. I was 27-23-1 for my big three picks during the season, 6-11 on my locks. Ugh. But you, Kyle, 3-0 last week, 52-35 on your recommended plays for the year, 6-2 in the playoffs, red hot as we are running through getting up to Championship Sunday.
Yeah, I think we closed pretty strong last year, if I remember, in the conference championships, and then obviously the Super Bowl. And I'll tell you what, I suppose when you do a show where you fashion yourself as an expert and give out picks, watching things play out in predictable manner, in a predictable manner, is kind of a good problem to have. And I got to say, we talked about this last week, that we were too jazzed about the divisional round.
Right.
You know, and we, you know, I think it was better than expected. Two of the four games were really good, but it was funny. New England-Baltimore, I had the points with Baltimore, and that but I still thought New England would win, and so that margin played out pretty well. Well, once Baltimore settled for the field goal, I was texting my dad at the time. I was like, New England's going to drive down and win this game. Then you had the second game. I think I even said on the show my predicted margin was 14 points for Seattle-Carolina. That's what they won by. It was a little higher scoring than I thought, for sure, but they won by that. Green Bay-Dallas, I told you I gave Dallas a great chance at an outright upset. My predicted final score was 28-27, and we came one Dez Bryant reversal away from basically getting that. And then, so with one game to go, Rick Morris.
Well, we were, I got to rag on you a little bit. I got to rag on you for that New England-Baltimore game, because for as much as you always like to go against the mouth breathers on this show, you were with them. And I stood against them.
I think you're wrong.
Baltimore to cover but not win was, that was an overplayed pick during the week, and y'all got away with it. I was on New England because I was terrified of being like everybody else. You were like everybody else,
well,
and you got
see,
over. Congratulations.
I disagree with you, Rick. I think you just attribute mouth breathing to people who disagree with you. We didn't get away with, I think if you had Baltimore, you didn't get away with anything. All you got away with was a wire-to-wire cover. I mean, that was a neck-and-neck game. I mean, it was a lot closer to Baltimore winning outright than them failing to cover. I just think it was a good pick. I think people naturally are a little scared to call for the outright upset in that situation. But, you know, when I was watching, you know, Baltimore drive down on the first two possessions, I was like, well, yep, Baltimore is pretty much as good as everyone says they are. And, you know, I thought they kind of underperformed one loss-wise. I thought they were the best team in the AFC North all year. But I digress. You know, I thought, you're right. It was kind of an, I guess, it's weird. And before I get to where I was going with that last rant, let me just say this.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's weird. With this past Monday's college football championship game, I was, unfortunately, our satellite went out here. We got a bunch of ice on our DirecTV satellite. Thanks a lot, DirecTV. Are we allowed to bash corporate sponsors on this program? Because I think I just did.
Go ahead. Yeah,
but,
they're not sponsoring us.
So it happened, and I had to race out to the bar just to watch the game. And I, sadly, as you know, I loathe Ohio State, but I had them plus the point. In that
Go
game.
Bucks.
And I had to wind up watching the game with Ohio State fans, which is, you know, my personal hell. These people, I mean, they're friends and they're fairly reasonable individuals. But the first thing I said to them was, when we met up, first of all, they were like, oh, you're here. And then secondly, I was like, yes, I am. And, you know, plus 7.5 is the closest thing you're getting to an OHIO for me. But I digress. I said that, I'm like, you know, if I were you guys, I'd be a little scared because every sharp person that I read or talk to not only thinks Ohio State covers this game, but thinks they win outright. And sure enough, they did. I think sometimes it's the case of, you know, a lot of times really sharp people align on something, and that's what you had with Baltimore. I know 7 points is a bigger window than most people realize, and that's what we got with that game. But team that did not need the points, similar to Ohio State, and I was getting to this to bring it all back full circle. After Green Bay beats Dallas, we were one game away. Do you realize this? We were one game away for a second straight year predicting all four conference finalists again.
Yep.
And then Indy goes in and upsets Denver, which I thought, honestly, besides Carolina, the Colts were the least likely dog to win straight up last weekend. But they did and I know that's going to be a big talking point this week. Was that more about the Colts or the Broncos? I mean, we have to be careful there. That almost sounds First Take territory, posing the question that way. And we certainly don't want to go down that primrose path. But, you know, and I know you think it was more about the decline of Denver. I'm inclined to agree with that. But we did get a surprise. We got two good games. I'm re-energized. It's very interesting, these two conference championship matchups, in that despite what I may say about the Indy-Denver game, I'm going to say this, and that I could make a case that both underdogs, and we have pretty prohibitive underdogs for a conference championship around here, I could argue played better games than the favorites last week, and they're getting generous points.
That's a very interesting point to make there. By the way, I had to kind of chuckle as your thought point on New England-Baltimore and you being aligned with everybody was great minds think alike. I suppose I should have seen that coming as your talking point for why you were in alignment with so many people. But that is kind of interesting. I will say two notes on show guests before we get going here. One, I have to give all the credit in the world to the other show guest that we had on last week talking football, Jennifer Hale from Fox Sports. And, again, she called it. She said the games would be better. She chastised me politely for my cynicism that these games wouldn't be as good. And, again, she was right. I guess that's the experience you get from being on the sidelines. We pontificate from at home. She's on the sidelines. Hey, what the hell? Maybe that gives you a little more insight. She was right. I was wrong. Whatever. Also, since we are taping this today, January 14th, I want to call attention, too, for anybody to go out there and check this out. Our previous mini-episode uploaded today, mini-episode number 508, best of the best of our conversations with Bob Barker, because this is the show's 8th anniversary. So I want to call attention to this August occasion and what we did to highlight that. Yes, five snippets from Bob Barker. By the way, and you'll love this, Kyle, one of them talking about his experience with The Price is Raw, doing his guest hosting on Monday Night Raw from September of 2009. That was pretty fun.
Have you really been doing this for 8 years now? Wow. I remember. We were back in a studio when this when you created this.
Yes.
Eight years is a long time to be. 8 years is a long time to be champion, huh? Okay.
Thank you, Andre.
Yes.
I remember
that first night. I was there. That's right.
You were there, and it wasn't intended to be that way, but it was sort of a passing of the torch with SNS. Remember, we were going to be the intermission show for SNS on nights when there was pay-per-views and beyond between
That's
the pre-game
right.
and the post-game. And then subsequently scheduling issues kind of put SNS on the shelf and, one of the two of you is participating more directly in the industry.
I was going to say, scheduling issues is a real polite way to put it, a real political.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, sorry, everybody. Sorry.
Exactly. But yes,
sorry, 8 years
so,
later. We I don't even know if we turn. I don't know if we even bothered to turn the light out. I mean, for God's sake, we really snuck out the back door on that thing. Oops.
Well, you know, it was great getting to overlap even briefly there. It's been great these last several years doing stuff with you on the show. So what a great double whammy for the anniversary to put up our Bob Barker highlights and to also get to talk some football. Again, this is going to be a great Sunday of football. I don't have a game that I'm as psyched about, frankly, as Seahawks 49ers last year and to an extent Broncos Patriots. I was pretty worked up for that one as well. I'm not as worked up for either one of these games, and that may kind of tip my hand a little bit as to where I'm going with this. So,
One thing, by the way, whatever happened to that other guy? Whatever happened to that other guy you used to get that one SNS with? Whatever happened to him?
What other guy?
You know, the other guy, the little guy that I used to do the show with.
Oh.
Whatever happened to him?
He may still have some involvement in the industry. I don't know if you're picking up what I'm putting down.
Is he doing well? Yeah, he's doing well.
I think he's doing okay. I think he's keeping his pencil pretty sharp these days.
Yeah. I texted him the other day. I said, a man only truly arrives when the Bleacher – well, I said, a man only truly arrives when the Bleacher Report writes about you. So, yeah, he liked that. So, unfortunately,
he is so outshining the old man right now that may come back to bite him. Let's hope not.
Whatever the Bleacher Report, it's Google raping articles get a hold of you. You're a made man on the internet. I'll say that much.
Exactly. If you're picking up what I'm putting down. So, as we move into Championship Sunday here. This is basically, we're getting to the sort of biblical thing of the last shall be first and the first shall be last. Last year, of course, that awesome nightcap, 49ers, Seahawks, an instant classic. Because they shifted from year to year, the Seahawks go on first this time. By the way, an interesting note, we always talk about the broadcast teams here. The final game of the season for both CBS and Fox, because the Super Bowl is on NBC this year. So for both networks, they'll be pulling out all the stops. The interesting thing to me, CBS the last couple of years hasn't even sent their studio team to the game. They do it from New York. That's like, I'm old school. Back in the day, you'd send the thing, they'd be down on the field, whatever. Let them shiver in the 20 below. What do I care? You know, send your broadcast teams there along with the guys in the booth.
Don't know if they'll do that in either venue.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I think as far as I'm concerned, CBS can send its studio team to Anchorage, Alaska, for all I care. That is a brutal group, man. That is a brutal group. Bill Cowher, I mean, you know, I know the book is he doesn't want to get back into coaching, but Jesus, who would want to hire him after watching him provide his quote-unquote analysis over the last several years for less
and his horrific Time Warner commercial since we're bashing
the television. I wasn't even going to dignify that with a mention.
Well, look, you know me. I watch most of the pregame shows as little as possible. I feel like they're gearing them towards housewives and the lowest common denominator. I don't even watch them much anyways.
People always want to demean. I mean, I always tell people this. People, you know, like, you know, a lot of my friends are big sports fans too, and they do the same thing you do and lampoon these shows. And it's fine that they're for they're for people who don't read endless articles a week on the internet about football. That's fine. It's a large group of people. I'm not going to fault somebody because he doesn't know all the relevance, because he's, you know, if he's working 9 to 5 during the week and doesn't have time to read the stats, that's what that show's for. And it's fine. Well, I pay no attention to it, and it doesn't hurt me at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, as a hardcore guy, it ain't for me. I'm not who they're programming to, hence I don't really
watch it. For you. Those shows, a pregame show is not for a hardcore sports fan. You've already got your fill. You already know what these games are. I mean, for Christ's sake, we're going to talk for 35 minutes about them.
Exactly, yeah. We're going to be doing our own breakdown, which, dare I say, just plug this in and listen to this Sunday again, as opposed to just watching the pregame shows. Your life will be better for it. We start with the 13-4 Packers at the 13-4 Seahawks. Coming full circle, it was the first game of the regular season on a Thursday night, week one. And here we are for the NFC Championship game, the matchup I predicted, the 1-2 going into the season in my book. 3:05 Eastern time from CenturyLink Field in Seattle. That, of course, 3:05 Eastern time being 12:05 Pacific time. So less time for all the 12th men out there to get drunk. Don't know if that'll affect the crowd any. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman, Aaron Andrews on the call, Fox's A-team. Some statistical notes just before we get into this, really. Predictably, Seahawks way better in run and pass defense. Third in the league in run defense, Packers 23rd, although I got to give them credit. 132 yards per game rushing coming into December. The last four games, they brought that down to 119.9. It was 82.5 yards per game over the last four games. They allowed Tampa Bay something like, 16 yards. It was 16 yards the second last week of the season, so that skewed it a little bit. But they've tightened up a little bit there. In pass defense, you've got the Seahawks, of course, first in the league. Packers are 10th, and it's interesting. They actually had more interceptions than the Legion of Boom, which most people probably wouldn't guess. Packers are way better in pass offense, 8th in the league. Seahawks 27th. For anybody alarmed by that, they were 26th last year in the league, albeit that was also mostly without Percy Harvin, although they had him for the playoff run, which they do not this year. In terms of run offense, the Seahawks are first. The Packers are 11th in the league. They're first not only because they have in beast mode there, but Russell Wilson with 849 yards. Factor that in as well. Seahawks are better in time of possession by a decent margin, 32-11 to 30-31. So you would kind of expect that, again, with the superior run offense. Packers are way better on third down offense. Seahawks are better on third down defense. Seahawks give up way more sacks. Seahawks had way more penalties, and as mentioned, Packers had way more interceptions. Probably the only thing I said out of all of that that would be somewhat kind of counterintuitive. I feel like this Sunday, the qualms that I have, I feel like we're two legs away from this Sunday being much better. One leg being Aaron Rodgers's, one leg Robert Mathis's. We'll get to Robert Mathis when we talk about the late game. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers's leg is more functional, but you got the Packers with a softer defense. Okay, they worked their way up to 23rd in run defense. Congratulations for that, I suppose. That makes this year a failure defensively, I think, in terms of expectations. They should have been coming into the year, both in the run and the pass, hoping to be no worse than middle of the pack, 16th or so. To rally to make it to 23rd, and you've got to go up to Seattle and face that, I have concerns. I have more concerns with Aaron Rodgers. Again, he got it done last week against Dallas. To get it done with less mobility against Seattle, I think, is asking too much. Seattle is laying 7.5 up from 7 initially. But I'm going to lay the points. I don't want to be that guy because, again, I got a lot of respect for Green Bay, but I'm struggling to come up with scenarios where this game is that close going into the fourth quarter. So I will lay the points with Seattle, take them to go back to the Super Bowl.
Like you, this was the NFC Championship game I predicted before the season.
Yes.
We have got it. And going back to that first matchup, which you talked about, these teams did kick off the season, and it was all Seattle, if you remember. 36-16, Aaron Rodgers. There were a lot of concerns about some of his decision-making in that game. Remember, they never threw at Richard Sherman the entire time. I expect that to be different this time.
Has to be.
Calf injury or no calf injury. And I'm with you. I'm not going to argue against the fact that the Packers' run defense, or lack of it, is probably a pretty big liability against a rushing offense that is leaps and bounds better than any other rush offense in the league. Seattle, now surprisingly, was only held to 100 yards last week by Carolina, but Carolina's defensive front, called back to its 2013 form down the stretch this year. That was a good – they kind of, after a slow start, they got it back, and Green Bay does not have the defensive front Carolina does. So I would be pretty shocked if Seattle only ran for 100 yards on Sunday. But I just keep coming back to the number, Ricky, and when you cross 7, that's such a big deal because, obviously, how many games do we see end with a final margin of 7 points. And if that's the case here, Green, you know, Seattle goes to the Super Bowl, but Green Bay leads with the cash. And it really bears mentioning that the line for the first game opened up at 4.5. Now, Seattle took some money, if I remember, across, a couple dead numbers. I think it may have closed at 5.5. That's not a significant move, obviously, going from 4.5 to 5.5. But when you go from 4.5 to 7.5, that's a pretty big deal. And as much as I still feel Seattle's going to win the Super Bowl, I said it they would last year at the start of the year. I waffled a little bit this year, but I'm on them again. That was my pick before the playoffs. It was my pick before the year. I kind of waffled in the middle there. But it's really interesting. Aaron Rodgers has never been a dog of more than 7 points in his entire career.
Wow.
So there's a lot of value here. Now, I will say, as an underdog the last 3 years, Green Bay is a pretty horrible 2-11 straight up, 2-10-1 against the number, and that includes 0-3 this year, both straight up and against the spread, including getting blown out in Seattle. But the points are generous. Seattle's defense is great, make no mistake about it, but during this run of theirs, the last seven games, they haven't faced anything close to a top-10 quarterback. Cam Newton, to be honest with you, is probably the closest. And, he's top 15 now, maybe even, top 13 as I just try to kind of throw out some arbitrary numbers for you. But now they're going up against the best in the game, in Aaron Rodgers. When healthy, Aaron Rodgers is the best, and he still looked pretty damn good last week against Dallas, who admittedly does not have the defense Seattle does, not nearly the personnel. I think that matters. I think this is an overreaction to Green Bay's close call last week versus Dallas, which I anticipated. I think it's an overreaction to the result from week one. What did we talk about with the Super Bowl last year? Yeah, Seattle wiped the floor with Denver, but if they play seven times, you're not going to get a result like that again. And I think it's a slight overreaction to the calf injury. I am taking the points with Green Bay here. I will go against you.
Couple notes that I want to make. This being a show, when we do our weekly shows here and our off-season ones, looking out or whatever, I really believe, I like to believe this and I do believe this, we're a show for people who really, really love football. If you love football, this is your show. And as such, we like to always throw out some other things in a supplemental nature if you really love football. I have put over through the course of the season for statistical purposes and notes that I've gotten USA Today Sports Weekly. We freak Grantland on this. Bill Barnwell is as fine a football analyst as is walking the face of God's green earth right now. Anything that Greg Cosell is ever on, any of the podcasts that you can catch with him.
Yes.
And I want to mention specifically in Sports Illustrated here, I'll refrain from making any crippler jokes, Andy Benoit, a great article on MMQB, the Sports Illustrated sub website with Peter King here, breaking down the conference title games, looking at the matchups. And I think that is a very, very educational thing for anybody to look at. I was pouring through that before the show and looking at some of the different things. He mentioned, as you did, certainly Aaron Rodgers has to go after Richard Sherman again, looking at some ways that might happen, maybe a little bit of trickery in terms of sending two receivers that way, maybe try and run a pick or some kind of confusion-type play. On the other side of the ball, you mentioned Seattle pulling away week one. Again, the thing that makes me queasy about laying a 7.5 is that Seattle is anything at this point but an explosive team. But for anybody that doubts that Russell Wilson is an elite quarterback in this league, not merely just an above-average one-game manager or whatever, what he did with those quote-unquote weapons last week against Carolina, my God, there are few quarterbacks in the league that could make Curse look that good, or the immortal Luke Wilson, or the other quote-unquote weapons that he has to work with.
Having yeah, Doug said Baldwin.
That, Doug Baldwin as well. I feel like they do miss Percy Harvin. Yeah, certainly. Week one, it was devastating to Green Bay. They kept running the end-arounds and tricking them and all that. I've been wondering through the course of the year, Paul Richardson, might he get worked into the second-round draft pick out of Colorado? Small guy, real shifty, whatever. Unfortunately, he ends up going on IR a week or so ago, and I did read some notes somewhere that Seattle had intended, as the playoffs went along, to start using him in that role. So something Seattle had intended to do is off the table. That may not be a big thing, but it's worth keeping an eye on. I just suppose ultimately in the end what it comes back to is whether or not you think the game is really going to be in play going into the fourth quarter. I like to think so, if for no other reason than aesthetic purposes. I've always said Championship Sunday, that's the day if you really love football, this doubleheader, you don't have, and going back to it again, the casual fan, you don't have the asswipe at the Super Bowl party who doesn't know if the football's stuffed or blown up. You know, this is a day for people who love football. And I want two great games. I want to believe, actually, you know, look, if you hit this one and I didn't, I'd be happy, Kyle, because that would mean that we've got a better game than I expect. But stylistically, I'd have questions about Green Bay. You know, to me, they are, you know, here's a nod to NXT, S-A-W-F-T, soft defensively. I have questions about them being able to handle the Seattle offense, let alone the Seattle defense with Aaron Rodgers with 1¾ legs at best right now.
Yeah, two things. One, the jet sweeps, the bubble screens that we saw with Harvin obviously aren't going to be there here. That's the good news. But I'll tell you, you know, you go to Russell Wilson, he's going to be there. And we have seen in the past, Green Bay is really lousy at defending the read option. They were the one who made Colin Kaepernick look like the greatest player in the history of football 2 years ago, if you remember.
Yes.
It appeared that they had never even seen the thing. So that is a point of concern, you know, from my standpoint, taking the point. You know, but, you know, Seattle's covered 7 in a row, too. What, are they going to make it 8? No, they're due. I think they're due to not cover. I have these teams rated 1st and 3rd in my power rankings. Is it really a touchdown difference between 1st and 3rd? I don't think it is. I think these teams are just a little bit closer than, you know, the odds makers are giving them credit for. And I'll bring it full circle here for you, Ricky. I'm going to get a little cute for you. A little Baltimore New England special. Seattle wins, but does not cover. Make no mistake about how I feel this one going.
I don't see everybody and their grandmother jumping on that play like last week. So I'll give you that one there. You're standing not alone certainly, but that's not the overplayed talking point of a week ago. Baltimore to cover, New England to win. So I'll give you that. Speaking of that game, there's your logical segue to the nightcap, the AFC Championship game, 6:40 Eastern Time from Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, the 13-5 Colts at the 13-4 Patriots, and Nance Sims and Wolfson, the CBS A team, calling their last game of the year, as previously mentioned, because NBC's got the Super Bowl.
Thank God. Here's the end of Phil Sims. Thank God it's the end of Phil Sims.
Not a moment too soon, eh?
No.
A couple quick statistical notes for this one here. Colts with a pretty solid lead in time of possession, 31-54 to 29-37. Curious to me because it's generally teams that have a great running game that you would credit that to, and particularly with Andrew Luck's completion percentage south of 62%. I don't exactly know how they were getting the ball 31-54 per game. That's kind of a mystery to me. Colts are slightly better in pass defense, 12th in the league. New England is 17th in the league. They're slightly worse in run defense. The Patriots are 9th in the league. Colts are 18th. Slightly worse on run offense, 18th in the league to 22nd in the league. The Colts are way ahead on pass offense, 1st in the league. New England is 9th in the league. We know they're both powerhouses there. Patriots are slightly better on third down offense. Colts are way, way better on third down defense. Patriots slightly better on interceptions. Colts slightly better on sacks, even without Robert Mathis, who I referred to earlier. And, again, Colts having allowed more sacks, and they have more interceptions on the season. And, again, Robert Mathis, you know, in a way, the Colts proved me wrong all year because I really thought that would be decisive, him not being in there. I don't know how you lose a guy who, coming into the season, I think in the FDH ranking of players, I think I had him in the top 5, regardless of position. That's how great he was. So they've made it this far without him. But in a game like this, they need every weapon that they could possibly have. New England, the last two times that they've played them, they've just run it down their throat, which is interesting to me because I texted you after the Baltimore game last week, and I was concerned. about New England completely abandoning the run. I didn't know if that was a conscious choice and they just had the balls to do it or if they didn't have the capacity to run it. And I said to you in a text, if Denver looks like the old Denver, I'm going to pick them to win next week because they're even harder to run against than Baltimore. Now, Denver, unfortunately for them, looked like an old Denver, not the old Denver. And again, as mentioned previously, you said there's two schools of thought. I am firmly in the school of thought that what we saw last week was more about the collapse of Denver than the rise of Indianapolis. Dan Heron, who, again, I've always been a skeptic of his, but he's been proven me wrong here, he's going to be one of the big keys to the game here. They have to have some kind of a semblance of a running game against New England, particularly if New England turns to that strategy a third time in a row. They cannot be dominated in time of possession here because New England has just dominated them physically at the line of scrimmage the last couple times that they've played. Interestingly enough, by the way, New England and Indianapolis, both worse, we mentioned this last week, on run offense and run defense than the teams they played. Worse in the trenches on both sides of the ball, and yet it didn't come back to bite either one of them. So the two worst teams in that are playing each other this week. But again, it has been a decided advantage for New England pounding it out against Indianapolis. We know that they can pass the ball on them. So Indianapolis in this game, this is one where, again, you mentioned that the lines here right around the touchdown. Indianapolis, they're getting 6.5. It was 7 at the open. I don't want to be that guy taking the favorite in both games, but I have qualms about Indianapolis' capacity to stay close, as I do Green Bay's. I will take New England to cover and to make it back to the AFC, past the AFC Championship game to the Super Bowl again.
Wow. Rick Morris, I feel that you always, your knee-jerk reaction to the favorite. I feel that, and that's what you do, where my knee-jerk
is the
underdog.
And I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I have a sense in my gut that both of them may not cover. By the way, New England, fourth time in a row in the AFC Championship game. Let's mention that.
Yeah, Bill Belichick's best coach in the business. I don't want to tell you you're wrong, but I would be shocked if both favorites covered in these games because that means you're basically not getting a close game. So, for that to happen, you have to have a pair of two-score games. New England, I guess you get 8-point games, which are technically one-score games.
I'm worried that's the case. I am worried aesthetically, as a fan of Championship Sunday, that may be the case.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen. Obviously, I took the points with Green Bay. Here, I'm not playing the side. I am offering up a play, though, folks.
Okay.
I'm not wimping out on this one. You will get a recommended play for me to make it two for the weekend, one on each game. You talk about the Colts kind of defying expectations here, Ricky. This is a team that sharp bettors have just been made to look, you shouldn't feel bad. Sharp bettors have really been made to look foolish by Andrew Luck. This is a team that went 13-5-1 against the number this year. For some reason I feel that I have one extra game in there. They've only played 18 games, haven't they? Not 19. So I think they might be 13-4-1 against the spread. Regardless, it's very good, and I think it's the best spread record in the league. That's all that matters.
Okay.
And they've kind of been that way all three of Luck's years. I'll say this. They have gotten better.
Yes.
They have gotten better despite the fact that, I say it every week. I'm a broken record, but I just don't really like this team that much outside of Andrew Luck. Going back to last week's game in Denver, I thought the Broncos' game plan was just awful on offense. I'll tell you what, I don't know who was making the decisions, whether it was Manning or if it was something from John Fox or if it was Adam Gase. If it's Adam Gase, I'd have a little bit of trepidation hiring this man because the way you beat the Colts is kind of throwing short over the middle, not long. They're actually pretty good. You talked about the Colts' pass defense numbers, and they're better than you'd think given how they were thrashed by Ben Roethlisberger. They were thrashed by Manning in that week one game in the regular season. They were thrashed by Tom Brady to some degree in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty good against the deep pass, but underneath you can kill this team. And can you say Rob Gronkowski, who was I thought would be a difference maker last week? He was, and I think he'll be a difference maker this week as well. Now, it's a bit interesting, Rick Morris, that I like the Patriots to win this game straight up, but I actually think the Seahawks' chances of winning straight up better, even though I'm going against them. And that kind of makes no sense. Does it?
That was kind
even
of
if
interesting.
I say it, it makes no sense. It really doesn't make a lot of sense. But, you know, the way I look at it is, of the four teams here, Indy's kind of the outlier. Seattle, New England, and Green Bay are my top three teams. The Colts finished the regular season seventh in my power ranking. So they're a bit of an outlier. And to me, for Green Bay to be getting more points against the Seattle team that's fairly even compared to New England, just didn't. That's how I'm justifying it, just to, you know, just a little journey inside my mind there. But
okay.
Into this game, you talk about the last 2 years, it's been 3-for-3 for Brady in New England against Luck and the Colts. Dating back to his rookie year, all of them have been whitewashing. 59-24, 43-22, 42-20. It'll be closer this time. I mean that's, I mean, those are some, I mean, that's 22, 21, 35-point margins. I mean, those are pretty hefty. But I'm expecting another shootout in this one. I know it's a high total, and, you know, people always think, oh, cold New England. Well, you know, the Colts didn't stop a high-scoring game last week in Foxborough against the Ravens, and this Colts offense is better. I'm going over 53.5 on this game. I think this is a shootout, and I'm going to tell you why. The advantages that Manning or the opportunities, I should say, that Manning had and did not take advantage of last week,
mm-hmm.
Brady will with Gronkowski. So New England's going to get their points. On the other side of the ball, Denver's pass rush was just non-existent last week. And
right.
They got some studs in that group, Ricky.
That's a mystery.
Yeah, and what else was interesting, and, you know, there's a lot of these guys who, you know, Aaron Schatz, who runs Football Outsiders, he's a Patriots fan. He's not ashamed to admit it. So he'll tweet generally a lot more during Patriots games. And he pointed it out pretty quickly, and he certainly was accurate for doing so. New England got no pass rush last week against Baltimore. And Baltimore's
right.
offensive line, while it improved dramatically from the previous season, you know, it ain't the Cowboys' offensive line. So
right.
I think Luck is going to have time to throw as well. The New England secondary, even Darrell Revis, was pretty horrible last week, I thought. I think we're going to see a lot of points here, Rick Morris, over 53.5.
There is a school of thought out there, and I know, and it's been pointed out to me, I can't remember who pointed this out to me, that when you have teams that, again, the last couple games have been thrashings, the Seattle-San Francisco thing was kind of the case last year. Remember, this is the last couple times San Francisco had been to CenturyLink Field, it was thrashings. And I said at the time I felt in my gut like it was due to go the other way, not necessarily San Francisco to win, but it would be a good game. That argued somewhat against my point on this game here. The Colts are due to have a closer game at New England. And, again, the points you make are, I think, all accurate there. The thing about Indianapolis, I pretty much agree with you as far as not much to like there. Not much to love. There are some things to like there outside of Luck. There's nothing to love there outside of him except for Robert Mathis when healthy. One could make the argument perhaps T.Y. Hilton, but it's kind of like you go back to the early game with Green Bay. How much of it is playing with Aaron Rodgers? You look at Greg Jennings, who's done
my point exactly.
Going to Minnesota. So is T.Y. Hilton Greg Jennings, or is T.Y. Hilton Jordy Nelson, who looks like he could probably do that anywhere? It's hard to say. But the thing about Luck is that's the most important position in sports, quarterback in the NFL. If you have a guy like that, you are a Super Bowl contender. If you don't, it's extraordinarily uphill. It is no coincidence that the four teams playing this weekend have elite quarterbacks. This is the game, too, where, again, coaching could come into play a little bit. The only guy that doesn't have a ring out of the four coaches this weekend, the only guy who's not a consensus, I would say, top 10 coach in this league is Chuck Pagano. He has something to prove going up against Belichick. There have been comparisons of Luck and Manning, and again, I find them to be extraordinarily accurate, not nearly that Luck is taking the place of Manning in Indianapolis, but that I think he's the same kind of guy over the long term, type of player, going to be, I think he'll have a better playoff record in the end, but other than that, I think he'll be similar. But you go back to early in Manning's career, Bill Belichick was really his nemesis. He kind of overcame that as time went along, We're seeing that repeat itself here. Bill Belichick against a young quarterback, that's another thing that gives me qualms about Indianapolis' ability to hang on Sunday. Andrew Luck hasn't crossed that threshold yet to where Bill Belichick is not the boogeyman for him. Could Sunday be that day? I think it's still a little early.
Yeah, well, you know, interesting. Luck had beat Denver previously before last Sunday. If you remember last regular season, they beat Denver. So, you know, what we saw last week he'd done before, and you make an excellent point. They haven't even been close to New England. Now, New England did run the ball well the last two games, back to that point that you made about the Patriots sort of abandoning the run last week. That was a conscious decision, and it's one I agree with. You know, balance is great when you can achieve it, but if it's not necessary, then it's pointless. And the bottom line is, you know, I think I mentioned this in talking about both of the Ravens' playoff games so far. Their secondary stinks. The guys they have in there either aren't good or are injury replacements. And the Patriots realize that, and they realize they couldn't run, so they're like, what the hell, let's just throw the ball every time. And it was, to be honest with you, it's the right move. I mean, there's no point to just run to run. I mean, if it's not going to do anything, then just get rid of it. I mean, you know, passing the ball short and doing stuff like that can, in some ways, you know, take the place of the running game. I mean, you know, it's not like New England was throwing bombs on every play by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, I'll be honest with you, I would be less surprised if Indianapolis won this game straight up compared to Green Bay. Although, again, I'm taking the points for the Packers, so take that for what you will. I feel I don't have a great hand. I didn't have a great handle on Indy Denver. It was the one game I sat out last week. And sidewise, I don't have a great feel on this one. So I'm going total, over. And, again, you know, I talk about Seattle. They've covered 7-0. What are they going to make, an 8? Indy's gone under in 6 straight games. What are they going to make, a 7? Come on. These are streaks that have to come to an end. There you have it.
I agree with you on likely your dog to win outright. Gun to my head, I say it's Indianapolis. If it's Luck and Wilson in the Super Bowl, that's what's interesting because, again, everybody's saying that Luck is the next Manning. I've been saying that stylistically they don't have a lot in common, but I've bought the whole Wilson is the next Brady in terms of being a winner and in terms of executing or whatever. To have the next generation Manning-Brady matchup in the Super Bowl, coming out of the class of 2012, which it looks like it's going to be on pace to go down as one of the very best quarterback classes ever. That would really be something. We, Kyle Ross, as is our custom, we will not be huddling to discuss the and preview the Pro Bowl. So we will next have coming up the
Super
Bowl.
Thank God for that. Yeah, only one more. I guess only one more show to go. Huh? It'll be the big one, the Super Bowl, and you know, I'll come up with something else, some props, and then you know, the Super Bowl, honestly, you know, to your point about, you know, for me, the Super Bowl is not that big of a deal. It's 2 weeks. It's one game. Generally, I make my decision. You know, last year I made my decision, I think, within 10 minutes of the line being out. I was actually in Vegas at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, by the time the game comes around, I'm, you have people over, whatever, something like that. You're with friends. It's fine and dandy. But, yeah, you know, my work is done at that point. So I promise, though, the show I'm really looking forward to will be after that at some random point in the future when we preview, when we give our first look to 2015-2016 season. I've already got a dark horse for you that you won't believe.
Okay.
I can already tell you who the most improved team in the league is going to be next year. It won't be close. I can tell you, right, but I'm going to save it for that show. I got it.
I'm going to have fun trying to guess this. Now you're in my head. Now I'm going to be trying to guess who this is. And
I got a team for you. Do I got a dark horse team for you? I'll like them even more. Here's a spoiler alert. I'll like them even more if they buck conventional wisdom in the draft.
Oh, okay. I know who you're talking about. I have a team that I think is going to make a leap also, where I think you're going to scoff as well. So it'll be interesting to break that down. Again, first we're going to have the Super Bowl to break down, and first we're going to have this glorious Championship Sunday to watch. I hope the games will be worthy of the grandeur of Championship Sunday. That's all we can do is hope. Thank you, Kyle Ross, for great work as always. Thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to mini episode number 509 of the FBH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.